Science can't explain everything. Just because you can't see me doesn't mean I'm not here.
Thank you for joining me, everyone, and welcome to Paranormal Encounters podcast series. My name is Dr. Kelly Renee Schutz. I am the host and the producer of this show. Sit back, grab yourself some popcorn, and let's get started.
Be careful what you wish for.
Yes, indeed. Let's get started here. Please welcome my guest this evening, Candy Slater.
Whether you're listening at home, at work, or anywhere, thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal, Para-X.
If you are searching for a paranormal investigative team, look no further. Candy Slater and her team will be your ticket. Candy Slater is a Reiki master, certified crystal master, certified soul shift healer, certified alchemist, and certified elemental healer. She continues to work on developing new skills, including the studying of crystals and herbs, as well as their uses in the paranormal field and everyday life. Candy has had multiple experiences with her husband, Derek, who launched into the paranormal field, an investigative group that helps many, many people understand those that have crossed over. Candy enjoys using equipment and trigger objects to communicate with and interact with the deceased. Though her multiple years working at a cemetery has come in handy, she has also developed empathetic communication skills that help her in dealing with clients. Candy enjoys researching haunted locations as well as their history, and in 2023, together with Derek, she founded a group called From the Ashes Paranormal Team, which involves several members which go and investigate unexplained situations. Candy is also the event coordinator for the Old YMCA in Historic Rock Island Paracon, which was started in 2023 and will again run in October of 2024. We have a lot to discuss this evening with Candy, so sit back and grab something, and please welcome tonight to my show, Candy Slater. Well, good evening, Candy, and thank you so much for being on the show today.
Well, thank you for having me.
Oh, this should be real interesting tonight, because it's not very often that I talk with investigative team members, how things began. And plus, you've got quite a shopping list of certifications under your belt, which I think people will find very interesting, things that I haven't even heard of myself before. So as they say, we're going to get rolling here. Go back for me. We're going to establish a foundation of how you became you or your interest in all this, and go back as far as you can and tell us about an experience or experiences you had, paranormal or outer worldly or extra, whatever. And we'll start with that as our base here.
Okay. Back in 2018, 2019, I had just come off of a long summer of concerts and things with my husband, and I'm like, oh God, we had so much fun, what are we going to do? And he was trying to talk me into going and doing a paranormal investigation, and I called it hocus pocus. I didn't believe in any of it, anything. So I'm like, no, not really. But I put him through things, concerts a man shouldn't have to go to. He went with me for them, so I said, okay, fine, but I get to pick the location. So I start doing some research, and I figure out the most haunted place closest to us in Iowa is Edinburgh Manor in Scotch Grove. So I said, okay, we'll go check out this place. And it's an asylum, for those who don't know. we drive out, and during the day, we're walking around the building, and I'm taking pictures because I'm always snapping pictures. We couldn't get inside. And as I'm taking pictures, I hear a crow caw behind me in a tree, and I kind of just look over my shoulder at this crow and see it fly away. Not impressed, I get in the car. I'm ready to go home. This is boring. Start scrolling through the pictures. It's as if I turned around and took pictures of this bird. Mm-hmm. Okay, let's go back and check it out at night. Because back then, I called it hocus pocus, right? So I'm thinking, oh, ghosts only come out at night.
Mm-hmm.
So out we go at night, and my hair starts doing one of these. And I'm swatting. I'm thinking it's a bug.
Right.
Now, I don't know, he's a medium at the time. He's laughing at me. And I'm like, it's a bug. Just let it go. Starts doing it on this side. I'm like, okay, the bugs are bad. Let's get in the car and go. It starts happening again. I'm like, we've got to get in that building if there's something to this. So we get back. We go in a day tour of Edinburgh Manor. And my earrings were getting messed with. All sorts of different things happen. Long story short, I end up in a hospital type of bed being held down. And ultimately, it felt like I was being choked. A medium that was with us said, let me show you what I see happening to you. And held me down the way I felt I was being held down. So it made a believer out of me. Fast forward 6 months, I finally find out that my husband is a medium. And we've been going paranormal investigating ever since.
All right, let me jump in right here. I have a couple of questions for you. So when you're at this manor and you felt like you're being held down, is this a feeling that you had because you weren't really in a hospital bed? Did you feel as if you were in a hospital bed being held down? Is that what you were feeling?
It was an old hospital bed that had been brought into the building. So okay. It was like one of those old mechanical beds. And as I'm laying in the bed, you know, we're trying to run a session, and it literally felt as though something, like I was being held down. And it turned out in the history that in that room, a woman was possibly, sounds like, raped and murdered in that bed.
Oh, interesting. Okay. So that sensation was pretty strong. And that was during the day, not during the night, correct?
That was in the day, yes.
Mm-hmm. And this was before you knew, or then do you came aware that your husband, I don't know if it was boyfriend then, was a medium. Did he ever share that with you?
He didn't until we were married a good two and a half years before I found out he was a medium. And we were at Ashmore Estates and walking down the hall, and he's walking, and it looks like he's holding. And I said to somebody, I said, looks like he's holding somebody's hand. Okay, they start doing some stuff, and he starts describing something, and this friend of ours who was with us said, I'm going to ask him a question. And I knew she was a medium, and she tells me what she was seeing, and she says, Derek, what are you seeing? And he starts describing the same thing she had just told me, and she goes, he's got it. I'm like, he's got what? What does he have? He's got the gift. I'm like, what? Well, he came out then and said, yeah. He says, I basically kind of like the sixth sense. I see dead people. I was like, oh, wow.
Interesting. I'm surprised he didn't tell you sooner. But, you know, sometimes people get a little weirded out by that if they don't know how someone's going to react to somebody having these types of gifts. And then they start to wonder about who they're with, and some people don't believe in this stuff, even though I mean I'm on your side of the fence here for the longest time. I everything was spiritual to me when I grew up. That's how the basis was, you know, religious, spiritual. But then as I started getting older, as a young chap, as they would say, I would have to say that I was starting to doubt that. And then everything progressed from there. I'm surprised. Did you not have any experiences before? What age did you say in 2018? Did you not have experiences at a younger age at all?
Not that I know of, but looking back, now that I know and believe what I do, I worked at a cemetery and ultimately managed it, living on the property. I was at the cemetery for 25 years, almost. Looking back at it, there are things now that happened, and I go, if I knew then what I know now, who knows? I might have some incredible evidence, because I think I had more experiences than what I know I had.
Let's talk about the cemetery here, because, you know, a lot of people are fascinated by them. A lot of people mm-hmm. run around them and do investigation work and stuff. And so I'm just going to throw out a couple thoughts here, and I want to get your thoughts on this. Now, I am a citizen researcher, and what that means is I do not actively go out. I actively go out looking for stuff in certain situations, but I don't necessarily go out looking for stuff. It usually comes to me. That's how easy it is for me now. But a lot of times people think of cemeteries as their first starting point. I didn't think of cemeteries. I thought of haunted bed and breakfasts, and that because I felt that there's nothing that's going to hurt me ultimately there, because they don't want to be responsible for a dead guest, you know, or whatever. But mm-hmm. I do know people that do run around in the cemetery. So some people say, well, people aren't, or the deceased aren't there anymore, so why are you running around in there? Why are you going in there talking to your father's headstone or your mother's headstone? Mm-hmm. Why are you doing that? They're not either there anymore, or you're not doing it right. You should be talking through God, and God can talk to them. You know, I hear stories like, if you don't say their first, middle, or last name, all you're going to get is, when you say dad, you're going to get all the dads in the cemetery wondering mm-hmm. who you're referring to. So there's all kinds of things about making contact with somebody in a cemetery. And since you've worked in and for us at a cemetery for so long, can you safely tell us a little bit about what that experience was like? We'll start with that, and then we'll evolve it to other things.
Well, see, at the time I didn't believe in paranormal. So when I would see people coming in, I mean, again, I thought it was hocus pocus. So I kind of thought, oh God, you're crazy. You're looking for ghosts. And I'd see people that would not want to walk on the ground, not realizing that a cemetery is actually like a giant checkerboard. No matter where you're walking on somebody's grave usually.
Yeah, exactly. But
as far as the spirit end, I kind of think it's all different depending on what your intentions are. You know, some people go in, don't want to go in because they think everything evil is there. Well, 25 years, I never had anything evil happen. Although I do look back now, I was in the cemetery one day with my assistant, who is ultimately my best friend. We were there, and she ran down to the office to get something. And this gentleman approached me, and he was looking for a specific young woman's grave who had been murdered. Mm. And I knew where the grave was, and I'm trying to point him, oh, this grave is over here. And as I'm doing this, he's getting, you know, no, can you take me to it? I said, my assistant's coming back up. As soon as she gets here, we'll hop you on the golf cart and we'll take you right to the grave. I need to tell her I'm sorry. I need to tell her I'm sorry. I need to apologize. Just give me a minute. My assistant pulls up. I walk over to her, start saying, hey, we got to take this guy down to this grave. I turn around. This guy is gone. Hmm. Looking back at it now, I wonder, because we found out later in the news, 24 hours prior, the guy who committed the murder had passed away. Hmm. So looking back, I wonder, is this one of those rare times? Because I have no mediumship abilities at all. I'm not psychic or any of that. But I look back and I go, was this possibly this man coming to apologize for taking her life?
Let's talk a little bit about that. Okay. Because I've been in situations where black-eyed kids, as a good example, or teens, have disappeared right before people's eyes, been possessed by something that was not them. But the thing is people ask, and I just interviewed someone, oh gosh, probably a months ago, who actually talked with a gentleman who had been dead for 9 years good half hour and didn't know that this gentleman had been dead until he went to this office and he was asking about how he could send something to this guy. And then they informed him, well, he's been dead for 9 years. And he says, no, I just had a half hour conversation with him. And it's been my understanding for so long that usually an apparition can't hold their energy more than a few seconds or whatever, just enough to be seen and then disappear, right? So when you're actually having a conversation with somebody and then all of a sudden they disappear, but they look about as real as you and me, then you start to wonder if you're going a little bit wacky here. Now, when you're talking to this gentleman, people will be curious here. Did this guy, how old did this guy look? Did he look about as real as you and me? What kind of clothes was he wearing? Did he slur his speech? Give us some of those details.
He looked just like you or I look. I had no idea, which is why it didn't even... I thought, oh, God, he must have gotten the car or he must have ran down the hill fast. Somehow, you know, I'm trying to reason it, where this guy went.
Right.
Well, he somehow disappeared. Okay, he ran off is all I could chalk it up to, because he did. It looked just as real as you or I. The guy was, I'd say, probably in his, looked 50s or 60s, you know, starting to show a little bit of age. Normal, looked normal clothes, just a pair of blue jeans and a t-shirt.
How about his eyes? What did his eyes look like?
I don't know that I paid that much attention, to be honest.
Hair.
Really short, almost not bald, but starting to thin, dark hair.
Eyes are kind of spooky in a way, because a lot of times, like when we had this black eye teen occurrence where I live, and I was involved indirectly, but directly enough in that whole situation. It was until he raised up his eyes and my coworker took one good look at him that she realized that she wasn't dealing with something human anymore. And then, of course, he grimaced and sharp teeth came out of his mouth, and then she absolutely went into trauma. Ever see this guy's teeth? Did he just sound like he was really anxious? Like he really had to say something to her? Like he
just had to find this grave. He had to find it at, you know, not crying, but on the verge of tears.
Type. Oh, sad. Very sad.
Blinking really fast. Yeah.
Interesting. Very fascinating and interesting. Oh, and then how did you guys separate again? Did you go to talk to somebody and did you leave him standing there, or what happened then?
He was standing there and we were up kind of by like a big upright mausoleum, the ones that look like little private houses. Yep. So he was kind of behind that. So I'm like, just give me a minute, and walked around to the front of the building. So it's possible, you know, God, did the guy run down the hill and there was a car I didn't see? You know, all these, that's what I had chalked it up to. But now looking back at it, I'm thinking it maybe was something, and that maybe he wanted to apologize to her.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, a lot of times, well, that's interesting too. I mean, final moments, even with somebody who becomes a murderer, sometimes they have a change I don't use the word attitude or personality, but and that leads it into a debate about whether or not they keep their same personality after they die, or whether or not some of them actually change to something more forgiving or happy or pleasant or something like that. So that's very interesting. People would also ask the question to you, now, did you have a cremation room as well on the property?
We were a cemetery, not a funeral home. So no, there was no embalming or any of that taking place on the property.
Okay. And so when you watched over the property, were you there to watch over it, or what were your duties?
Well, I did the funerals, sold graves, designed cemetery monuments, you know, helped lay things out, plant the flowers. We did all sorts of things like that. But at night, the main duty was, you know, keep an eye on it, make sure if you know anybody was in there after hours, get a hold of the authorities to get them out, that type of thing.
Yeah, and because technically, I believe most, if not all, cemeteries do have hours where you're not supposed to be tromping around in them after hours. And it's not just because of who's hiding behind a tombstone. There are safety issues there. There's liability issues there. The whole 10 yards that goes there. And they don't want to be responsible for your, for not yours, but other people's mishaps regarding getting injured on the property.
Exactly.
You know? 'Cause there's a whole slew of whatever that goes along with that. But, you know, so how late were you there until, or did you go home at a particular time?
When I first worked there as the office manager, I was there till 5 o'clock, unless funerals or, you know, doing different things like Memorial Day time, then later. But when I became management, I lived in the house on the property. So I was there day, night, you name it.
Did you ever have any inkling at all about when, I mean, it gets kind of creepy at night. They're very quiet in these cemeteries at night. I mean, as they say, they almost sound dead. Well, that's because they are, you know, but did you ever see anything or were you just not really buying into any of that? And it was evening and I'm in a cemetery and that's just the way it is.
I didn't buy into it at all. So I didn't pay attention to it. In fact, my sister who had been into it, I made a mockery of it. I invited her over to the house and like set things up with string to make lights move and things. So, you know, now I look back at it and I go, God, I was so cruel because things do happen. But yeah, no. So, I mean, there were, you'd hear noises in the house and I'd be like, yeah, it'd be July and it was a boiler. Okay. So you'd hear the, you'd hear noise. Oh, that's just the pipes for some reason. They're making noises or, oh, that's just the dog. Well, the dog's in the same room with you, but I just made excuses because I didn't buy into it at all.
Well, you're the perfect employee for a situation like that, right? Because if you got creeped out after seeing some things or wondering about what's going on, not a lot of people hang around in situations like that if they don't think they can really stomach some of this energy that might be lingering around. How large was that cemetery? Did you say again? It was like how many deceased were in there?
Over 60,000.
Oh my goodness! Seriously. Mm-hmm. Oh, for God's sakes, you know that there's something going on somewhere. Yeah. I mean, that's for sure. So that's interesting. So you may have actually had an encounter, which we hear about periodically, including myself, and be part of it. But yet you just never really know unless you have a situation. But we'll talk about equipment in just a moment, because that's the other thing too. It just seems like when people are using their equipment, they might pick up things now. I don't know whether it's either better. Sometimes the older equipment works better, but differently now than what we had access to back in the day. I know I use an app once in a while, and when it sounds very intelligent, words are coming out, then I feel like I've got, you know, I've made a hit of some sort. But then again, you know, I've got the theory as well that some people believe that not a lot of people hang about their graves, you know, in a cemetery. They're busy. Their energy is busy doing other things. What are your thoughts about that?
I think they move around. Just like your guides that are with you can move with you. I think you can, I don't want to say summon because it's the wrong word, but I think you can bring the spirit wherever you, if you go to the cemetery looking to talk to your deceased mother or grandmother, if they want to appear to you, I think they can the same as they could in your living room or at a park, wherever you are.
Yeah, I agree with that. Yeah, they can move around. I know I was 600 miles away when my father was passing away and came into my classroom and started. It's a long story, but, and I wrote about it. I've got several books with my experiences, and I wrote about just all the crazy stuff that happened on that campus when I was teaching. But I knew it was him. The screen started to slowly, never did this before ever, started to slowly go up very creepily, like, and my students all panicked and they started pointing at the screen. And I turned around and my first gut feeling was my dad just died. And because, you know, 600 miles away, that kind of thing. And, but what do? You don't turn around and announce to your class, oh, my father just died. You just know intuitively and gutly that there, and that screen had never done that ever in the 14 years that I had been in that room constantly. So, you know, when things are different,
you know,
something is at work behind the scenes. And before we get into that, let's talk a little bit about you and a lot of these certifications that you have. I have a list here. The first one I want to ask you about. So as you heard in the introduction, she is a Reiki master and also a certified crystal master. But tell everybody a little bit about what a certified soul shift healer is.
Okay. That's a certification I got from Dr. Athena Parakis. Basically, you're stripping yourself down and I don't want to shifting. You're learning why you are the way you are. And like some of our bad habits, we all have them. You just can't make them go away. So you learn to embrace them and how to live with them. And you basically, you're shifting your life and moving forward in a new direction.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. And so by going through some form of, I don't want to call it therapy, it sounds a little therapeutic to me. Mm-hmm. This helps people to try to move past some of their, as I say, their addictions or crutches or whatever their problems are. Now, you also have one here, and I'm reading this from a list, a certified elemental healer. I'd like you to talk a little bit about what you believe an elemental is and then go from there.
So the element, you know, working with the elements, you got your gnomes, your fairies, your sylphs, you know, all your different elementals, and you're calling them in and working with them. I usually use it personally while I'm doing my Reiki, calling in, you know, depending on what I would need assistance with, calling them in to help, kind of like you use crystals in the healing. I use the elements and crystals.
Interesting. Okay, so you have that. Yeah, because I think when people hear the word elemental, they're not quite sure always what that might be, or whether or not they're attracting elementals based on the types of statues and or figurines that they have. Some people are very attached to gnomes and they put them in their gardens and stuff. Other people say, don't put those gnomes in your garden. That's not something you should have in there. What are your thoughts about people's reactions to like gnomes?
It varies person to person. Again, kind of everybody's entitled to their own belief because, you know, personally, if you want to have statues in your garden, there's a reason for it, just like people want to have religious statues. To me, it's you do what feels right to you.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and you're not going to be wrong.
Yeah, yeah, because sometimes what might be affecting some people may not affect others at all, and right. So that's why to tell somebody, no, those you shouldn't have those in there. Well, if they haven't been affecting the person and the way that they perceive them is more in a different light or more positive, then why would you want somebody who feels comforted by something like that and has a positive vibe around it, take that away because that now makes them feel uncomfortable. So everybody is different. And I'm glad you brought that up. Let's talk a little bit about when you decided then to start forming an investigation group? Because it's interesting that up until, did you say 2018, if I heard you correctly, when you first had that experience or whatever, you probably, and working in a cemetery and being relatively unaffected by what you're experiencing in there, which is very interesting in and of itself, because a lot of people would probably report seeing things like shadow figures at times, or maybe things were disrupted, but without reason, because nobody was in there to disrupt them, or light, we call them what, lightning balls or balls of light that are literally flying around in there that people might catch if their eyes are sensitive enough to see that sort of thing, or if their cameras are sensitive. But if you're not supposed to be in there after certain hours, there should be very few people catching anything at all unless they have good permission. Yeah. So when did you first start forming your group? What did you feel you needed to do that for?
So my husband and I, after we started our little adventures, we joined a couple different groups, but you know, you think things are right, but they just aren't. So we started doing our own thing, and we're like, you know, we need a group name because we're doing all this stuff and we want to post, hey, we went and had this great adventure. So we formed the team with another friend who has since gone her own direction, but we formed From the Ashes Paranormal, and, you know, we, that's where we do our adventures. And it's kind of unique with my husband and I, because he is the medium. And like I said, I have no psychic abilities. I'm the healer. That's my role. I rely on equipment. So we go in and he might be like, he won't tell me what he's getting. I do the historical research. We go in, he try over in this corner. Maybe go with something more along the line of a jewelry box, or maybe take whiskey and cigars. So I will go with the equipment and try to back up. And then he shares with me, well, this is what I was getting. So I validate him with my equipment, and he validates the equipment going off with what he's seeing.
Interesting.
So it's kind of,
That's interesting, because, you know, the first time I ever really became acquainted with using trigger objects was watching one of these ghost programs on the television. And I thought, you know, I never really thought about that before, but a lot of people sometimes don't realize that, just to give you just kind of a weird example, like say you're out in Gettysburg or whatever, and they may not respond to just a plain closed individual that doesn't talk like what they used to talk like back then. But once you started using trigger objects or things that they're familiar with and actually sounding like or dressing like what they used to be back then, you might have a greater reaction or response. Have you found that to be the case with some of your situations? Are there any that you can tell us about?
Oh gosh, yeah. There's a few of them. We frequently visit the old YMCA in Rock Island. For example, there we've used a deck of playing cards, cigars, whiskey. Take an old whiskey bottle, fill it with coffee, watered down to be the color of whiskey. We've gotten great responses with that. At Farrar School, brought in apple. You know, hey, you want the apple? Can you please make this light up? You know, there are different objects like that. We've had birthday parties for spirits, believe it or not. Bring in a birthday cake and sing it. We've done so many different things. The trigger objects, or, you know, we brought in handcuffs to a jail and gotten, you know, very interesting responses. So it seems like if we have trigger objects, like you said, it, I don't want to say, because I don't know for a fact, but it makes them more relatable to their situation.
Right. Yeah. I mean, bringing in something that they're not familiar with from back in their day, which would help more so than you know, something that we have in our day. I mean, right now, think about it. They never had cell phones back in the day. You know, I remember when the first cell phone kind of came out, even though the cell phones had been out for a long time, but they just weren't circulated the way they were when they finally hit the ground running. But, you know, I remember all these different phones we used to have and could use, including what was in a car and all this sort of thing. And to bring something like that and go, yeah, here you go, talking to this phone. They don't usually know what that is. What exactly am I talking into? What is that thing that you're holding in your hand? Oh, here, stand still. I'm going to take a picture with this thing that looks square and rectangular. And it's like, yeah, no, there's a camera here and I just want to, you know, hold still. So what have you found regarding, do you usually have to go to like an antique store or something like that to find something that maybe something might be able to relate to?
Some of it, secondhand stores, hand-me-down items, heck, even a garage sale, you know, or estate sale or something like that. Because like you said, it blows my mind. I've had better luck. You set a cigar next to a REM pod and say, could you go get close to that cigar and touch it, that there's some lights on the ground that'll light up. Versus, can you go touch this REM pod? They're like, what's a
REM pod?
In my eyes, and I could be way wrong, but in my eyes, they're going to go, what the heck's a REM pod?
Yeah.
You know, if you're talking to somebody from 1920s, because we didn't have REM pods then.
Right. Right. And not only that, when I'm over in Europe and I've had experiences over there, one of the things that always amazes me is that I don't know why people think talking in English to someone that died back in the 19 or 1800s is going to sit there and turn around and understand English when their native language is German or Spanish. Or, you know, I had a lot of activity in Lucerne, Switzerland, in a hotel, very up to do. And I had a lot of activity going off on my K2 meter all night long. And I cannot recall at all, unless I talked to a psychic afterwards, who was constantly approaching me. And the story was that somebody of something to do with France and Germany, France and whatever it was, another country, was there at the time during some kind of a war. And what this thing was, or what this energy was looking over at me constantly. That's why I was going off, setting it off, trying to figure out if I was a friend or a foe. Thank God I was probably a friend, because who knows what would happen to me if I was a foe. But, you know, that's what I'm saying. This person here, I didn't know French. I didn't even know what was bending, if it was German or French or whatever. So what has been your experiences along that same lines? I mean, granted, we're in the United States, but just the idea of explaining things to something from way back when. What's the earliest that you might have had to explain something to someone? Like 1800s, probably?
Mm-hmm. Easily, yeah. 1800s. Yeah. And I use the old time trigger objects to help explain. And I usually say this little box here that lights up, because again, I could be wrong because we don't know. I would think they would understand lights up. Okay. Whether they had candles then or lights like we have, they understand what light up means.
Right.
So we like to use the term, okay, we got this box here with lights on it. Can you make it light up for us? You know, if it's got colors, if you want to tell us the answer to a question is no, please light it up and make the color red appear. If it's yes, please light up green. So we kind of, I don't want to say dumb it down, but we make it easy enough for even a child to understand, because you could be talking to a child as well.
Right. Well, the other thing too is then the question comes in is does energy see color? I mean, so you have red and you have green, and you say, make this go red or make this go green, unless they realize which button after a while is yes and a no. But I'm not sure if when you're deceased, if you can see color. What are your thoughts about that?
I've honestly never thought about it. Now you gave me a new one. I'm going to try this side, that side, and then try red, green, and see if I get the same answer.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's tough because we don't know. I mean, it lends itself to the same thing of vibration and hearing and hearing sounds and all that sort of thing. But we don't know. So when I go out to even anywhere, a haunted room or a haunted place or whatever, and I'm using my I connect very well with my K2 meter. And okay. So people have a tendency to connect with certain electrical objects in their hands. Not everyone will be able to connect with the K2. Not everybody will get responses off their app if they use the app that has so many words. For example, like if you ask the app something and the word comes up, Damon, or, you know, or demon, and the person's name is Damon. I mean, that's the other thing. They only have so many words that they can choose from, which is remarkable that they're choosing anything to begin with, if you think about it. But I have actually had very intelligent conversations with stuff that I'm not even sure was friend and or foe, because of I've haunted three homes. I've had experiences in all my homes, and I've been choked at least three times in my previous home, one of my previous homes. And I thought the thing at the time was a friend, but it actually turned out to be a foe and something very dangerous to me. But it had a very intelligent conversation with me because it knew what I was doing. It commented on the artwork that I had, et cetera, et cetera. So it leads you to believe that it's got eyes. You know, what are your thoughts about, we'll start with the apps. What are your thoughts about apps that give you words? Do you believe this stuff works, or do you believe that it's just, I don't know, that with certain people it works and certain people it doesn't work?
I personally use like necrophonics or necrometer, ones that have phonetic sounds, not pre-programmed words. And the reason is, and I'm not knocking anybody who does use them, but I want to know if I hear a word, like you said, chances are it's intelligent communication. Because how do we know if you got something that's got, whether it's got 2,000 words or 10,000 words pre-programmed into it, how do you know you're not turning it on and it's just spitting out words and they happen to be connecting with the, okay, you're in a school and you get the word notebook. Well, was it because it's in that bank and it just happened to spit out because five words prior meant nothing?
Yeah.
Where if you use something that doesn't have built-in words and all of a sudden you're out of school and you start hearing pencil, notebook, okay, I'm more apt to believe personally that now I'm communicating with something. Okay, are you looking for your notebook and your pencil? You know, I don't know.
Yeah, well, and that's right, too, because if you're next to a cell tower of any sort or anything that's giving off some kind of a communication of some sort, and of course, we go right back to the old thing of the old white noise routine and picking up words that come through. How do you know that these things are so random that, you know, how do you know? You just don't always know. But sometimes if you have a good gut feeling and you can connect things, like if your husband's a medium and somebody else kind of verifies or validates something like that, chances are likely you're getting closer than what you could have been at otherwise. And I can't remember. I mean, while we were chatting, there was something else that popped into my head that it may come back to me, but I'm going to have you talk a little bit about people always want to know what's the scariest experience you've had doing an investigation.
Probably that one at the very beginning when I was held down in that bed, because as a not believer and literally feeling like your shoulders being pushed down to the bed and your legs pulled on and pushed and held, and then feeling that, what I'm assuming was a hand, you know, come up around your throat and putting pressure That has to be the scariest.
Yeah.
Between that or watching when my husband would channel and something goes into him. We were at the old YMCA up on fourth floor outside of John Looney's room. And I'm talking to him. We didn't realize there was a static camera 5 feet away that caught this all on film. But I'm looking at him. I'm like, are you okay? And he's like, yeah, I'm okay. I'm okay. And a few seconds later, you see his eyes roll and come back. And I'm like, okay, who am I talking to? His face almost started to morph and shift in front of me. And Lisa, the owner of the building, was with us. And Lisa looked over and she saw it too. She's like, nope, we're out of here. We take him down at the exact minute where he comes back too and says, where are we going? What are we doing? The REM pod in John Looney's room goes off. So it's like he went back to his room. But we get downstairs and Lisa goes, this is what I saw. And she points to a picture of John Looney. And I said, that's who I saw him morphing into too. So it was kind of creepy watching somebody's face literally. I mean, I'm sure he physically wasn't shifting, but it's like his face as I'm looking at him is becoming somebody else.
This was your husband that was going through this?
Yes.
Did he feel in a trance, or did he feel, I mean, he might have been channeling, but did he feel himself kind of morphing into this gentleman at the time?
He saw John Looney walking towards him. He said he felt something, and the next thing you know, he was getting he was being taken away. And when he came to, was where are we at? What are we doing? Why are we going down the hall? You know, he had no clue,
mm-hmm.
no clue that we were talking to him, and
yeah,
he was in him. Yeah.
So does he ever go into trances in other situations, or? When he's channeling, and has he ever morphed in any other situations? Once you start that, does it continue, or is he more in control of that now?
He's learning to be more in control of it. He's been working with Catherine Cirillos over in Greece quite a bit on that. So he's learning more of when he will and won't allow it. He's also starting to work with Scotty Rorick and Rick Hayes. They're helping him as well. But yeah, he's learning how to control it better. And one other one, his voice turned into a little girl's voice once.
Oh my, talk about that a little bit.
We were at the Bell Mansion in Indiana, and before doing an Estes session, he didn't know any of the history. And he's like, I'm seeing a woman. She's carrying a little baby. I want to say under a year old. But the baby's died and she's all crying and now she's painting, and he's talking about this stuff. And I'm just like, okay. Not knowing he was spot on. Their baby had died at 11 months old. They start doing an Estes session. It was Derek and our friend Jenny. They were doing double Estes. And all of a sudden, I look over and I see a shadow coming by. I said, I just saw a shadow. And Jenny's saying, they're coming, they're coming. And I said, the shadow just passed behind me. And all of a sudden, I see the shadow kind of cut in front of me. And Jenny jumps up just as Derek falls over. But right before that, he was talking like a little girl. Mommy, mommy, I love you. And his voice is totally like a little girl right before he fell over.
Interesting. Interesting. And who do you think, did you think something attached or went inside of him to do that?
Possibly, we were thinking possibly the little girl that had, you know, the little baby,
mm-hmm.
but that the baby was able to communicate. We're not 100% sure. I know that sounds crazy, but we're speculating that it was the infant that had passed away.
Hmm. Interesting. Could it have been a trickster of any sort or anything demonic?
Definitely.
Have you been in that situation, other than your husband, in that one situation where you have heard little giggling, little kids laughing, stuff like that?
I personally haven't, but he has. He's actually seen them as little kids and has been like, no, 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 something's not right here. And so as we investigate a little more, it's kind of, okay, we kind of try to get to it. And he's like, no, this, it's presenting as a kid, but I know, you know, my gut's telling me it's not a kid. Mm-hmm. And yeah, mm-hmm. I don't remember. There was a couple of times that happened, but I don't remember exactly where they were. But yeah, he's had a couple of that.
What does he think they are? Does he ever bring that up? Not really. He just knows that that's something of maybe of this, I don't know, something more outer, not necessarily outer worldly, but something that's not necessarily of the right energy form. Is that kind of like
something that's presenting itself as a kid to try to get his soft side? Yeah, but
correct. Vulnerable.
Like, yeah, once he figures out, he knows, nope, that's not a kid. It's pretending to be, but it's not. So then he, at that point, he just kind of shuts everything down.
Yeah. Yeah. Because it's the attachments and the something mm-hmm. that wants to, I've had 16 attachments on me that had to be removed at one point. And at first I thought, how is anyone going to, I don't even know I have attachments on me, you know, that kind mm-hmm. of thing. Yep. And when they're removed, it was the most oddest experience of them all. I actually levitated up in bed one night, my mouth opened up, and I vomited tons and tons and tons and tons and tons of air and the whole 10 yards. And then I just collapsed when it was done and over with. And who did it was a couple down in San Diego, where this woman had the ability to remove attachments. But how do you know you have an attachment on you if you don't feel like you have an attachment on you? Yeah. But I was so vulnerable when I did. People can be so, I don't use the word naive, but they don't understand that when you're messing around with energies and you don't know what type of energies there are, and I didn't when I first started doing this type of work, I didn't realize I had so many on me. What are your thoughts about that?
You're 100% right. Yeah. People, and naive, unfortunately, is probably the right word to use. They're so naive and think, oh, I can go in. An example, going back to the YMCA in Rock Island, but we were there. There was a kid, didn't believe. Okay. No different than I did. So I respected that. But he takes a plunger, start acting like it's a male part. I'll get the ghost up the butt. I'll show them who's boss. There's no such thing as ghost. Disrespectful, right? He goes up to the fourth floor. He comes down about 10 minutes later. This was during a free roam time. He was in tears in the parking lot. Wouldn't go back in the building. We're like, what happened? Oh, I just saw, I got slammed up against the wall. I saw my life flash before my eyes, and I don't know what happened to me, but I ain't going back in there. You know, you got to be respectful, and yeah, it's.
Yeah, the challenging part, the provoking part, the mm-hmm. tough exterior, I'm going to show them who's boss. I'm the master of my kingdom here. Doesn't always kind of fly in a lot of these investigative type of things. If you want to ask for trouble, just go ahead and provoke something, because you might not even be doing it meanly or rudely. I mean, I could tell you experiences that has happened to me, not because I provoked, just because I existed in their space. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes when some of these apparitions are territorial too, mm-hmm. you know, do you leave when they tell you to leave, or do you say, can I just stay for a little while and then I'll leave? I mean, I don't know. What do you do? Have you ever had anything come over your device saying, leave?
Yes. There's been times where it says leave and we stay a little longer, but a lot of times, okay, do you really want us to leave your space? You know, get it to confirm a couple times, and then if it's it, okay. You know what? We're going to respect that. We'll leave and we go to somewhere else in the location. And if it keeps up, then it's okay. You know what? It's time to pack up and call it a night. Because it's, in our eyes, it's no different than people coming into your house. We're going into their home.
Right.
You know, you tell your company, hey guys, I want to go to bed. It's time to go. You want them to go. For some reason, if they want you to go, you go.
Yeah. Yeah. And I don't think a lot of people understand that, really. They'll just stay, or they'll discard whatever is going on around them. So do you do a lot of home investigations? You are an investigative team. And mm-hmm. So when you go in, is it because people want you to find out what's in there, or do you do it just to kind of collect more information about the place? How do you see yourself as an investigative team?
So it goes a few different ways. We have done some residentials where families have called us up and said, hey, where we've gone in, investigated, okay, here's what we think it is. You know, maybe we can debunk it that, oh yeah, this noise is this coming from the basement or whatever. So we've had that, or if we do find something, we can, you know, help them do cleansings or, you know, whatever they want. Cause you can't tell somebody they have to do a cleansing in their house. You know, here's what we found. Here's how we can help you if you would like. We're actually working with a business that has been having some issues, and they're trying to decide, okay, do we want to now be a location that offers investigations, or do we want to say, no, we don't want this here? So we're working with them to determine that. And then we also do just what we call the fun investigations. Let's go to locations. Let's try to get to know the spirits there, who's there, learn their stories. And then I help the YMCA with different events, and Old Baraboo Inn. We help them with events as well.
Interesting. Well, if anyone needs to, and as we're running out of time here tonight, we'll have to have you back at a later date. If anyone wants to reach out to you, whether they have questions or concerns, or maybe something's happening in their own lives, and I don't know if you take them time to want to help people to that degree, and things like how they can find you. And then also I want you to talk a little bit about this Paracon that you had last year and what's coming up.
Okay, so I can be found on Facebook, TikTok, or Instagram. You can message me right through either of those platforms. As far as the Paracon, on Saturday, October 5th, from 9 a.m. until 7 p.m., we have a Paracon at the old YMCA in Rock Island, Illinois. This year, Get Haunted is going to come and lead a VIP investigation from 8 to midnight. Mysterious Adventure Tours, they're putting together an actual tour now that's going to start in Chicago, visit different haunted locations on the way to the YMCA, ultimately arriving at the Paracon and spending the day with us. We've got over 100 vendors this year. Yourself, you're included. You're going to be there with us. Mm-hmm. Paraflix is a sponsor, as well as Get Haunted. We Are Paranormal. So many teams. So it's really, we're calling it kind of the Paracon of the community, by the community, for the community, because it's all so much networking and things going on in that Paracon. So it's going to be something for everybody.
Yeah. And do you have speakers lined up as well?
We are lining up speakers. I don't have that all set up at this point, but we do know Rick Hayes, who's a 2-time psychic medium of the year and consistently in the top 25 mediums of the country. He's going to be a presenter and do a 2-hour gallery reading. Josh Purvis of Searchers, he's going to be joining us and doing a presentation. And Nick Simons and Aaron G. Thompson of Netflix's 28 Days Haunted is going to be doing a presentation.
Oh, good. Nope. It sounds to me like it should be a good time and a fast day. Once it starts, they usually can roll pretty fast. So that sounds really good. Yeah. So this information will be at the end in the show notes. I'll make sure we have that listed down. Make sure you look up. So if they want information on that Paracon, where will they go to?
They can, on Facebook, we do have an event set up, the old YMCA in historic Rock Island Paracon, or they can go to the Haunted YMCA Facebook page and get to it from there as well.
All right. And I'll have that information at the end as well, in case people can't, they can always come back and freeze frame and grab that from there. Well, very interesting conversation tonight. Went really fast. And especially not often do I get people have a different perspective about what it's like to actually work in a cemetery for so long. Mm-hmm. However, that's very interesting, along with the investigative work that you do. So on behalf of the show, well, again, we'll have you back. Thank you so very much. And yes, come and see all of us at the Paracon in October. So thank you, Candy, for being on the show.
Thank you.